food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, September 29th, 2014. And good afternoon now.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, I'm going to go ahead and get right into the market report today and the numbers. And then we have a little bit of a, a very sad announcement to make today. But let's first get into the market report today. Gold today, it struggled. It was up about $5-6 in early morning trade. Couldn't keep the hold, though, down 380 at 1216.60. Silver is down 18 cents. Today at 1758. Platinum was up 7 at 1314, along with palladium up 15, almost 2% at 793. The USDX today, we're going to be talking about that. You know, everybody is raving about how great the US dollar is, but when you really look at the strength of the dollar and the country behind it, that only goes to show just how bad the world really is. If everybody thinks the dollar is the only place to be, I mean, it's an incredible situation. But the dollar down 0.03 in the index, 85.60. Crude oil was up 90 at 94.44. Paper markets today, pretty big rebound. Early morning news, the Dow was down like 170, 180 points right off the when they opened the gates this morning, and it was able to come back to just down 41 points at 17,071. The NASDAQ was down 6 at $4,505. The S&P down 5 at 1977, and the 10-year yield 2.49%, down 0.04. So a lot of strange things going on, and we'll be talking about those in the U.S. dollar. But first, the announcement that I need to make today. I know a lot of shortwave listeners for a very long time. I'm sure we have many listeners who haven't heard of Dr. Stan Monteith or was able to listen to his program, depending on where you listen. But he's been doing radio program for a very long time. I was involved with Dr. Stan and on his program for 9 years, three times a month. We did programs together. And today I received notice that Dr. Stan Monteith was taken home to be with his Lord. A very sad day. He's been who's been battling cancer for about the last 6 months, I guess. And he was doing programs up until, I was scheduled to do programs with the with Dr. Stan the second week of September, and they did cancel those. So he tried. He wanted to make it through the end of the month, but he just became too weak. And he's been a, I've been in this venue, in this conservative patriot venue, for over 20 years, and there are few that I believe hold the same integrity as Dr. Stan. Dr. Stan was a man of God. He's a true believer in Christ. I'm, in my mind, a true patriot and a hero. It's been an honor, and it was a privilege working with him. And I've been blessed.
Well, for over a decade, Dr. Manteith led a delegation of physicians from Santa Cruz County in the House of Delegates, the California Medical Association. He was concerned about AIDS. He thought there was a certain amount of fraud there. Over time, the government came around to recognize his position that it should be treated as a medical problem rather than a civil rights issue. He'd done 5 hours daily on talk radio up until recently, spoke extensively, and lectured on geopolitics. He spent 30 years researching the causes for America's spiritual and moral decline, and as you said, passed away this morning. He was a good man. He fought the good fight. He stood firm to the end. He'll be remembered. He'll be missed. God bless him.
You know, in 2 years, we've lost two men who have meant so much to so many people. And his son David requests prayers for Barbara and the family. And he certainly will be missed. You know, I've been blessed both with Dr. Stan and Bob Chapman, with you, and so many. Sometimes you wonder, how can one be so blessed? But the world was blessed with Dr. Stan. And so keep him in your prayers, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to have a little bit of a tribute to Dr. Stan at the end of the program. But in the meantime, Al, investors are pledging allegiance to the dollar. Probably the wrong thing to pledge allegiance to, but the U.S. dollar index, as which I mentioned, against the basket of foreign currencies, that has climbed to its highest level in over 4 years. There's a momentum, and it's unprecedented, and that comes from an analyst at the Societe Generale this morning. We all know that the dollar has been the world's top business currency, and it has been viewed as a safe bet. But, you know, when you look at our economy and you look at the amount of debt that this country has, and to which the point that the world is still traveling to the U.S. dollar with all the problems that we have to face, it only, to me, it shows how the rest of the world is faring. they're really in bad shape, if they have to come to our dollar in order to put their funds. Europe. You have the central bank that is starting to stimulating of its own for its economy. You have which resulted in a weaker euro. You have the Japanese yen. They have their ongoing economic problems. And with the stronger dollar, you'd think that it might be a good thing. But what happens when your dollar gets stronger? There is a downside. And the downside, with a robust dollar, it cheapens imports, which helps to export our inflation. But exports, American exports and products, are more expensive to the rest of the world. So if they're saying that our manufacturing is getting stronger here in the U.S., well, a stronger dollar is going to hurt that domestic manufacturing.
It won't hurt domestic manufacturing, but it'll hurt manufacturing that is intended for exports.
As U.S.
If it's just domestic and for domestic consumption, it's not going to hurt that in a way that's obvious, but it will hurt exports.
Exactly. But then again, if it's going to hurt exports, then you're going to have companies that are looking to downsize, and you can see it filter through to the economy as jobs and revenues.
Well, the lesson here is that, again, the economy is something like a balloon. And you can squeeze it one place to contract it, but it's going to bulge someplace else. And the point is that the people who think they can control the economy, all they're doing is squeezing the balloon. And they can do that, but they can't do it without inadvertent consequences. And they can squeeze it in one position in one place, and it's going to make the economy better at that location, but there's going to be another part of the economy that's going to be diminished. We can, if the dollar becomes stronger, hooray, it's going to be better for people who have dollars to buy imports. You'll get a better deal on your imports if you have dollars. That means you have to have a job or you have to have savings. On the other hand, it's going to be bad for people that have jobs or businesses that are associated with exports, because it's going to make our exports less competitive. We're not going to sell as much. People are going to be laid off. Some businesses will go out of business. And it makes you wonder. I'm not sure if there's anything they can do when it comes to controlling the economy that does more than temporarily alleviate a perceived problem. Maybe you see the problem for a while. It's, we got to do something about this. But as soon as we do, we're creating the next problem. And you can't look at this without wondering, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea if we simply didn't manipulate the economy. What if we just let the free market run things? It would be, there'd be a certain amount of instability. There'd be a certain amount of volatility, right? But it wouldn't create, in my opinion, it wouldn't create the same long-term problems that we're going to see when we allow for government manipulation. We'll have problems with the free market. We'll have a problem. Stock markets will plunge all of a sudden. We'll get used to it. Stock market will come back up. Gold will plunge. Gold will go up. But it won't be stable necessarily, but it won't be catastrophic either, I suspect.
Well, and it's true. What's interesting, this weekend, you had the prime minister, their new prime minister of India, and he was able to pack the Madison Square Garden for a sellout performance to 18,000 members yesterday.
18,000 members of what?
Of the Indian diaspora, whatever that is. I'm assuming other Indians that are American placed, Indian born folks.
People born in India that have immigrated to the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. But he's looking to change India's destiny, and he's there looking and starting a mantra of made in India. He is over here making all these appointments with all these corporations. He also has a meeting with Obama either today or tomorrow. This week sometime, to talk about getting more people in India jobs. He's talking to Google, Citigroup, all the elite corporations.
He wants more outsourcing from this country to create jobs in India.
Exactly.
Oh, what a wonderful idea. At a time when we don't have enough jobs for the people in this country, let's send some more to a foreign country. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many politicians other than Obama will go along with that.
Probably, it'll help open up perhaps the trade agreement that they're trying to complete. I don't know. But the campaign is not made in India, but MAKE in India. So, don't make it anywhere else. But his mission is to make India a manufacturing hub.
Well, then he's going to compete with China.
Yes.
He's going to try to take business that China, insofar as China has been manufacturing products for the United States. He's implicitly saying, no, instead of having them made in China, why don't you get some that are made in India?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll throw in a free package of curry.
Well, the problem that India really, supposedly the problem India has versus China is they don't have the skill set, the intellectual.
No, I don't think that's the case. The Indians, at the top end...
That's what I thought.
They're highly educated people. Their problem probably is serious infrastructure. I mean, their roads aren't supposed to be worth a darn, and that may be true in China also. I don't know what all of India's problems are, other than the fact that they have a massive population, and I mean big time. I don't remember the population of India, but several hundred million. I'm only going to guess. If I said 700 million, maybe that would be roughly correct. I don't know if that's true or false. But much bigger than ours, and it may be much bigger than that, too. It may even be much bigger than that, but certainly bigger, way bigger than the United States. Lots of poverty, bad roads, bad infrastructure, unreliable power system, the rest of that, I don't know.
But if he succeeds, and even getting a small percentage make in India, it certainly is going to put a hurt, I would think, on the U.S. to some degree.
But only on the ordinary people who work for a living.
Exactly.
I mean, it'll be great for some major corporations. They'll be able to find some more cheap Indians to make products, and they can sell it to anyone in this country who still has any money. If you have any money, well, then you can still buy products until you go broke. But you're not going to be getting jobs while we are outsourcing or making in India or whatever. How about we make something in the United States? How about we bring industries back to the United States? What is our obligation to pick up the white man's burden and take care of everybody in the third world? Sooner or later, someone's going to have to recognize this is killing this country. And it's being done with the complicity of our politicians. And I think a lot of people realize that it's not news, but no one's doing anything about it. At least, not significantly. Not so far. No one's coming back and saying, look, United States of America first. I don't have anything against other countries, but I don't see a reason to sacrifice this country in order to enrich others. They have their problems? Good. Figure them out. Work them out. Do what you got to do with them.
And, you know, today I was reading an article, and I mean, everybody knows our feelings on elections, but Ted Cruz, he's prepping to run for the presidential election 2016, which is really not that far away. And he thinks a foreign policy-focused presidential campaign is going to be his way into the White House. And his brief view on everything is if and when military action is called for, it should be A, with a clearly defined military objective, B, executed with overwhelming force, and C, when we're done, we should get the heck out. I don't think it's the job of the military to engage in nation building. It is the job of our military to protect America and to hunt down and kill those who would threaten to murder Americans. It is not the job of our military to occupy countries across the globe and try to turn them into democratic utopias. My question to you, Al, do you think the 2016, the election by 2016, do you think this is going to be an important issue in which to become elected? Does it show just how out of touch these people are with the problems financially, economically, and how difficult it is for people to get along? Are they so out of touch, or is this a viable, is it going to be an important thing?
Foreign policy is always going to be important in any election. But if I had to guess, by 2016, the majority of our problems will be perceived to be domestic. Mm-hmm. Foreign policy would be interesting, but most of our problems will be right here in this country. And these domestic, and we will need resolutions to domestic problems, in part because, again, I have a bearish perspective on what's mm-hmm. going to happen to the economy. And if that perspective is, if it turns out that it's right, and it turns out that we're headed for a significant economic decline, then people are going to be screaming for jobs. They're going to be screaming for food. All right? And this won't be a small thing. I mean, you know, a worst case scenario is going to be a worst case scenario. It's going to be a difficult time. And my guess is, I believe we'll see that before 2016, and we might see it way, we might see it, who knows? You know, it's hard to say how long we have until we do see it, but I think it'll be the primary issue will be domestic in 2016.
That's what I
thought. Foreign policy will be secondary. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
And I have to say it. I'm going to read a very nice letter. I mean, I get lots of letters, so I don't want to think that I'm picking and choosing and forgetting others that send me letters and compliment what a great job we do. But she bought the special 1/10 ounce Gold Eagle coins the other that we were advertising last week. And it was a very lovely letter. Someone who's been listening to this program since the mid-90s. And she brought back some memories, and I will have that letter tomorrow. She said some very fine things. So with that, I have to bring up, remember, folks, buy small fractional coins. Stay away from those K-bars. Stay away from multi-level marketing. Just think, if you had an audience of thousands and thousands and thousands of people and they just signed up for one, who do you think makes all that money? So just stay with the coins, things that are recognizable and acceptable, and you'll do fine. Save your gold for your savings account and your silver as your checking account. We've got great deals on everything, great opportunities with the prices being at these levels. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got the 50-cent pieces, Actually, there's a lot of Ben Franklin's in there, and they're really cool coins. They're in great shape for circulated items, so give us a call for 50-cent pieces. It's a mixture. There's some Walkie Libs in there and some Kennedy halves, but the majority is some Ben Franklin's, and they're really neat to have. A lot of them are dated in the 40s and, of course, the 50s. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, DGS for discount gold, silver, coins, coins.com.
Okay.
Fred?
got an article here that was, I'm not sure what the original source was on this, but it was published at Yahoo Finance. And just the headline, okay, is interesting to me. Well, it's Yahoo Finance. And the headline is, stocks try to regain footing after Hong Kong unrest sends them lower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They've got some kind of a disturbance and some demonstrations taking place in Hong Kong. And they claim this was enough to send stocks lower. All right, this is a globe. Oh, my gosh, they're demonstrating in Hong Kong. The world must be coming to an end. I look at this in light of the stocks have been holding up just fine, despite the fact that we have ISIS trying to take over Iraq and Syria. That's not a problem. We don't have to pay any attention to that. We've got the Russians facing off against the Ukrainians over in Ukraine. That's no problem. That's not affecting the stock markets. But, oh, my gosh, they're protesting in Hong Kong. And so the stock market has allegedly gone lower. I have a problem with that, Melody. You understand that there's something in this that just does not strike me as rational.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. But really, when you look at what these kids are demonstrating about, they're demonstrating against Beijing's attempt to control the financial hub. And certainly, you know, you have a little bit of Tiananmen Square going on, and, you know, the secret that China is still a communist country, you know, might pop to the forefront. And so I'm not, you know, I mean, China might have to.
I get that.
But I agree.
It's potentially significant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's,
it is.
It's been something that's going on for a couple of days. All right. We've had a problem in the Ukraine since early in this year. We've had a problem in the Middle East for much of the year.
Thousands of people.
Response out of that. That's not a problem. Stock market shrugs that off. Not a problem. But we had a demonstration in Hong Kong, and it just strikes me as,
we have a beheading here in the U.S. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. Hello?
It's just weird, 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 weird. I don't know who writes this stuff. It doesn't make sense to me, that's all. It's irrational, unreasonable. What it really points to me, is simply evidence that the markets are controlled, manipulated, whatever. They're going to let the market fall because of something that's going on in Hong Kong, but they can sustain it because despite what's happening in the Ukraine and the Middle East.
Well, you know how they released, was it Forbes? I don't have it right in front of me, the numbers, but Forbes released the 400 trillionaires in this country or the world. And, you know, they out of 400 of them, they control like $2 trillion or something like that.
Yeah, you're saying billionaires. You're not talking
billionaires. Right, billionaires. But when you control that kind of money, they can have a lot of impact on the markets. And, you know, whether it comes from government, whether it comes from the Federal Reserve, whether it comes from, you know, these, you know, billionaires, that, you know, they can change any market. I mean, unless you're a fly on their little shoulder and you can bet the same bet that they do, you're just,
and even then,
just screwed. Huh?
You know, there was a point in time when the markets were controlled by the free market, right? It's never been, I doubt that the market, there's ever been a day when the market wasn't, when any of the markets were not disproportionately manipulated by people in positions of power. We talk about it today. I think it's been going on forever. Certainly it's been attempted. But I think there was more free market participation in it. Right now, you get a couple hundred billionaires squabbling over who's going to make money. Any one of them can do something stupid that may impact us all, but every one of them, the other 399, are watching each other, and they may do something to go back after them.
No, I trust you. They all work in concert, and they all take their little turn. I mean, that's certainly what, you know, there's only 400 of them. There's not that many. None of them. They all work together. And that's all part of being the elite. Absolutely, it is. I mean, you can see
that they have.
I mean, you can see the reports.
Yeah. They work together.
I mean, you just do Buffett, Gates, and a couple of those IT kids. That's the majority of it. So, yes, you know, Buffett and Gates work together. You know, they pull out their friends and they control it.
Yeah, but they've already made so much money, they can give it away. The rest of these
people don't give anything away.
Well, they allegedly do with charities and whatever. Jeez. The rest of these billionaires aren't giving any of it away. They intend to get more, and that means they're going to get some of it, not only from Joe Sixpack, but even from their fellow billionaires.
There's got to be conflict.
There's got to be competition up there. I don't know how serious it is.
Their competition is governments, the central banks.
They own the government.
That's where they get the money. No, they control the government so that they get what they want so they can make more money. Mm-hmm. It isn't each other. Their competition is the government's.
Yeah,
they own
the
government.
If push comes to shove, these guys are predators. They will, push comes to shove, they will eat their own. That's what it comes down to my mind, in any case. Here's another one that's a little bit along these lines. This is from Zero Hedge. Five U.S. banks each have more than $40 trillion in exposure to derivatives. To put that in proportion, I believe the gross domestic product for this country is around $16, $17 trillion per year. We have five banks that are exposed each to $40 trillion, more than $40 trillion, in exposure to derivatives. That means we're talking about each one of them has exposure that is double the size of the whole national economy, right? More than double. And there's five of them. So they've got, $200 trillion in exposure, which translates into something like 12 or 13 times the size of our gross domestic product. Does this inspire anyone's confidence? Huh? How can that be? If I'm going to sit here and say, listen, I'd like to borrow some money from you people, and you can depend on me because I'm only in debt to the tune of 12 or 13 times the size of the whole gross domestic product, how many of you are going to loan me any money? You know, you ought to sit back and say, this guy's never going to be able to pay his bills. You have to make that conclusion. How are these banks going to deal with this? And you know, it's like the old joke about porcupines mating. How do porcupines mate? And the answer is very carefully. The government, the banks, whatever, are going to have to deal with these five U.S. banks. They're going to have to deal with them very carefully. But can we do that? The problem is so big. Sooner or later, something is going to go south. And when it does, we're going to see another debacle of the sort that we saw in 2007-2008. We'll see that again.
Well, you know, their underlying assets on these derivatives, I mean, their rates, and any time a bond or a stock, a loan, a currency, a commodity, virtually anything could be, you know, what they're tied to. So if any one of those things change, I mean, it can wipe out the whole system.
And,
I mean, Lyndon LaRouche, I saw numbers where he was talking about $2 quadrillion for the derivatives. I just saw a report from the Oxford University. They're looking at the worldwide derivative market as $1.2 quadrillion. So I'm assuming it's probably somewhere between 1.2 and the $2 quadrillion that Lyndon LaRouche had stated. And
but no matter how they calculate this, it is so much bigger than anyone's capacity to repay. It doesn't matter what, it almost doesn't matter what number. The numbers are interesting. They do matter. But after a certain point, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like being hit by a nuclear weapon. All right, you get hit by one. Okay, that's important. Is it important if you get hit by 2, 3, or 10? Probably not. After the first nuclear weapon, probably the next 10 that come down aren't going to make a lot of difference. This is like that. The dimensions are so enormous that after a certain point, and an early point, things collapse. And after that, big deal. It's like, I think it was Winston Churchill pointed out that after a certain point, the only thing additional bombs do, all they do is make the rubble bounce. The same thing in our economy right now. We need one black swan event, And after that, everything will make the rubble bounce, but not much else.
Remember Warren Buffett, he stated derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a comparison, a quadrillion. You know, people throw these trillions out anymore. I mean, they're just, trillion is becoming the same as a million. Was,
yeah, I know.
You know, 30
and not that
ago.
Long ago.
And not that long ago. No.
Yeah, no.
And so here's a quadrillion. Is 1,000 times a trillion. 1,000 times. The annual gross domestic product of the entire planet is between 50 and 60 trillion.
Yeah.
So the derivatives is 20 times the size of the global economy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, doesn't that scare anyone?
Well, it should. You know, it's
because it's
telling
just
you,
not these numbers.
What is it telling you, Melody? It's
run
telling
for the hills.
That we are operating with a financial system that's based on electronic digits and pieces of paper, and they have expanded the numbers of these electronic digits and these pieces of paper out to a point where they're completely irrational. Nevertheless, the system is based in large measure on these extraordinarily irrational numbers, which has to tell you that now would be a good time to get away from those irrational numbers. And how do you get away from these irrational imaginary numbers? They say there's a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. They might as well say there's a quadrillion Klingons up on the planet Mars. It doesn't make any difference. It becomes irrational. And yet the system is dealing with a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. What's the remedy? How do you escape exposure? You get away from a system that's based on paper and electronic digits and depends on enormous irrational numbers, and you look at something tangible and reasonable like, how about an ounce of gold?
Well, why would you want to do that, Al?
Tangible that is not derivative or paper or digital.
Al, you don't want to buy gold here at this level. It's too low. It's going lower. There's predictions out there. Gold's going to 700. So why shouldn't people just wait? I mean, I don't understand. I can't even believe that people are not rushing into gold like they did back in 2008 and 2010. I guess it just has to be something that's just happening right in front of everyone's face.
It may be that they're broke.
Not when you're talking about $6 trillion sitting there in pension funds and IRAs, if that's probably more than $6 trillion. No, there's plenty of investment money to be coming into these markets. And then people want to know why gold is at $1,200. It's a lack of interest. It's really what it is, although interest is picking up. I went to the U.S. Mint page earlier today, see if I can pull this up real quick while I'm talking. And gold, for 1 ounce gold eagle coins, actually rebounded to where we are seeing the second biggest month of the year so far. There, I believe, was 51. Oh, they've increased it now. 55,000 ounces that were sold for the month of September. The next highest month was at 48. So we certainly have beaten the number of ounces in June for the 48,000, but of course January, which is always a distorted month, had 91,000 ounces of silver. So, I mean, we're almost there, and we still got another day of trade. Silver, the same thing with silver. Remember, it started off so sluggishly. Well, it recaptured the number of sold, 3.3 million ounces of silver eagles in September. And certainly there's a lot of other products that are being sold and so forth, but with these numbers, you can see the big turnaround that people are taking advantage of some of these lower prices for gold and silver. So
that's true.
Very interesting. Yep. The major turnaround in a week.
Well, another week's coming, Melody. We'll see what happens next. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, back with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
We have a caller.
Okay. Who's calling? Who is calling?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have that. And we have Jerry from Indiana. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Melody. How are you today? How are you now?
Great. Good.
Shows.
Thank
As
you.
Always, great show. I just got a maybe a comment and a question, and I really don't have any answers, but listen to this ISIS deal last night on 60 Minutes and on the news, Al, and, you know, how much a threat they are. Why in the heck is our southern border still open?
Well, the answer is because they want to create a North American Union. They want to unite the United States, Canada, and Mexico into what would be initially a single open economic region, and which would inevitably evolve into a single political region. All right? And the cost of that would be the loss of the United States of America. They expect to achieve this result by simply flooding enough Mexicans into this country, or before it's all done, there's nothing you can do to get them out, and therefore you might as well join them. And that's their idea. And whether this is a good idea or a bad idea, there is no proviso for it in the Constitution. The government's refusal to protect our border against an invasion by illegal aliens, and worse, the government's encouragement of illegal aliens to flood into this country, constitutes acts of treason committed against the United States of America by our president, by our senators, by our Congress, by our federal judges. They are prepared to destroy this nation for the greater glory of the New World Order. And all I can say is, may God strike every one of them dead or in doornails. Now, I don't know if that answers your question, Jerry, but that's my opinion on it.
I'm hearing all this stuff, and I just wanted to hear your input, and I agree with you 100%.
You're just trying to raise my blood pressure, aren't you, Jerry? You're calling up with one of those questions that gets me ranting.
Jerry, go ahead and pop a couple out on me for that. But anyway, Melody and Al, why is it, you know, I see the stars and the moon and the constellation all in perfect alignment. Why isn't gold at $2,000 an ounce now? I'm just trying to fathom, you know, here it is down around $1,200, and maybe you can answer that too, Al.
Well, it's been suppressed, right?
Well, let me say this. You can have the perfect world economies, and you can't have the perfect Wall Street with high gold prices. I mean, the two don't mesh. And this is why they put such extreme pressures on gold. If gold was running now at 2,000, do you think they could have a 17,000 stock market? People would want to know, well, why is gold high? Because, you know, gold is a hedge against inflation. Gold is a hedge against, you know, all the geopolitical strife around the world. Gold is, you know, the safe haven. So why do you need a safe haven when, you know, people who have a 17,000 Dow? You can't have two going at the same time. So they manipulate the price down. And, you know, all the people that bought gold during the 08 to 2010, they've all been flushed out of the gold market, which is fine. They're weak buyers anyway. They don't understand the true fundamentals of gold. And so they're gone. And, you know, they've gone elsewhere, which is a good thing. But, you know, it's plain. It's just they manipulate it down because you cannot have higher gold prices with what they're doing to the markets.
I think the big issue,
yeah,
what I begin to see increasing with increasing clarity, doesn't mean I understand this precisely, but it becomes increasingly apparent to me that the real adversary working against gold are the central banks. Not just the Federal Reserve, but the other central banks of the world. Why? Because their fundamental product is fiat currency. And what is the primary enemy, adversary of fiat currencies? Mm-hmm. And the answer is gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's from the perspective of central banks who make their money by selling pieces of paper and stacks of electronic digits that have no intrinsic value. Their principal adversary, their principal enemy has to be gold and silver. My guess is that's who we're ultimately. People sit back and over the years we've sat back and said, oh, it's because of J.P. Morgan Chase or the banks on Wall Street or the federal government or something. I suspect that if you get into this and you look at it more closely and you track it to the root, the fundamental source of the antagonism for gold and silver are the central banks, not just the Federal Reserve, central banks, the producers of a fiat currency. If gold catches on, what goes down? Fiat currencies.
Right.
That means they are going to be badly hurt if gold goes up. So they're fighting, I suspect, they're the ones who are principally trying to hold this in place.
Well, Al and Melody, can I make a comment? My son, fifth year, poli sci student at Indiana University. I had him listen to, you know, shortwave radio when he was about 10 for the alternative news, and, you know, and I've been listening for 40 years probably, but anyhow, he's got a professor down there, Melody, that says, and this professor, he says, thinks quite a bit like what you and Al and many others do. But he said, this is what he told my son. He pulled my son off to the side and says, my dad dabbles in a little bit of gold. You know, can you explain who really manipulates the market? And he said, yes, I can. He said, picture the pyramids in Egypt and Rothschild sitting on the top. He said the Rothschilds manipulate the gold price, and you know, I don't know how much Rothschilds own. He did say they were the largest owners of gold in the world. I don't know if this is true, Melody. This is just what my son's telling me from this college professor. He also said that he knows at least, Al, they own $55 trillion. If you put that into dollars, they at least own that much. $55 trillion.
They can in gold.
World hunger. I don't know if it's in gold. I'm assuming that's all their assets. I don't think that's a gold figure. But this professor said that he has been following for years and years. And this professor kind of thinks outside the box, but he said that they at least own $55 trillion. Your comments on that?
Well, if I were,
matter, I
Baron Rothschild, Meyer Amstel Watt Rothschild, who started this line, I believe it was his comment. It's been attributed to him. He says, words to this effect, this might not be an exact quote, but words to this effect. He says, I don't care who makes the laws as long as I get to issue the money. Now, what does that necessarily mean? Rothschild can't issue the gold. You understand that? He's saying if I can control the issuance of money, I can rule the whole thing. He can't control the issuance of gold. It's dug out of the ground, but he can control the issuance of paper. Insofar as anyone sits back and they say, ha ha, I want to rule this whole thing, therefore if Rothschild is right, I've got to control the issuance of money. I don't want any gold around. I want paper that I can control, and if I can do that, I can rule the world. That's the implication to my mind. And again, this goes back to the idea, this is a fundamental war between the value of paper and digital currencies, fiat currencies, and the value of gold and silver. Tangible, objective value in the gold and silver versus the illusory perceived values, the fictional and fantastic values that we find in paper and electronic digits. And goes to who's going to run this place? Who's going to run it? We the people or Rothschilds or people like them, the central banks? Who's going to really run this thing? You know, one of the things that I've observed over the years, and I've studied the legal system for, been involved in studying it for over 30 years now, and, you know, politics, one thing or another, I have come to understand gold and silver as the people's money. This is the money of the people. The way this was originally set up, the way the system was originally set up, is if you wanted more money, you go out in the woods or out in the plains or wherever it was, take your burrow, take your pick and your pan, and you could dig it up and pan for it. And when you found the gold, if you're a prospector, you found the gold, you take it to a mint, they would assay it, they would purify it, they would cast it into discs, which would become coins, and the government would coin the money. They'd stamp it on both sides, and they'd say, this certifies that this is 1 ounce of gold, 99% pure or whatever. All right, that was all they did, was authenticate your gold. It was the people's money. When they started with this paper, it's no longer our money. It's money that belongs to some entity other than the American people, and it doesn't have to serve the American people, in my opinion, because it's not really the people's money. Does that make any sense to you, Jerry? Jerry apparently is bye-bye.
He's gone.
Okay. All right, so in any case, what have we got, Melody? 3 minutes?
Yes, because we'll be stopping a little bit early for a little tribute for Dr. Stan Monteith. He always opened his program with a certain way, and we're going to do that at the end of the show. So,
all right. What have we got here? Here's something. U.S., China, Europe nearing Minsky moment. This is from a report. That's the headline from CNBC.com. The world's three economic superpowers, the United States, China, and Europe, are heading for a major collapse in asset values because their economic models favor consumption instead of productivity. This is according to one economist, Steen Jacobson. He says, we're still not wise enough to realize that our current model is a Ponzi scheme rushing towards its inevitable Minsky moment. And what he means by the Minsky moment, it refers to a phrase coined for the Asian debt crisis of the late 1990s. Unsustainable debt will be the cause of the crash, according to economist Jacobson. and will occur when the cash returns on assets become insufficient to service the debt taken on to acquire those assets in the first place. Jacobson gives no time frame, but says for his thesis, the problem of huge debts has been swept under the carpet by central bankers and policymakers and will come back as low inflation or even deflation. Well, point I'm getting to, we can speculate how these problems are going to manifest themselves. Maybe in low inflation, maybe deflation. I don't know what's going to happen in terms. But we are talking about first. An economic model based on consumption is a Ponzi scheme. All right? No one has to produce anything, but everybody gets to buy something. It's irrational. You can't eat more than you produce. That's the way the real world is. The government says, oh, yes, you can. We can provide you with free lunches forever. And they can't. Someone is actually paying for those free lunches. And what happens when we've exhausted all of their resources and they can no longer pay for any more? What happens then? We're headed, as this economist predicts, toward a Minsky moment, toward a crash. It's inevitable. Fasten your lap straps, buckle up, folks, and get ready because the stuff is headed toward our fan. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Dr. Stan Monteith. Bye-bye.
Bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I want to tell you that America's under attack today. There is a small, dedicated group that is using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government and to install socialism here in the United States. They're subversive. They're working at the highest levels of our government. And they're getting away with it because the average individual doesn't understand the Constitution. They don't understand that the whole purpose of the Constitution was to limit the power of government, and that most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is frankly subversive, and they're going to continue it as long as the American people sit back and do nothing and are not out demanding that certainly our leaders adhere to the oaths that they've sworn to uphold our Constitution.